Back Talk is an extension of the long-running award-winning movie review show, It's Movie Time, which airs Fridays at 3:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM, Columbus, Ohio. Hosted by John DeSando, this podcast version features additional content and banter with guests. And I'm the guest.
You are.
Mary Urena.
And I'm John DeSando. And this is Back Talk. And Mary, we've got a very quiet monster to talk about today.
I wouldn't qualify it as a monster.
Well, in the sense that it's going to dominate the Golden Globe and Oscar landscape.
It's a juggernaut.
Thank you. Even better. But it is a film that we need to talk about because some people will feel it's way too minimalist. It's called Nomadland, of course. Am I somewhat accurate in saying that?
It certainly is a minimalist style approach to storytelling, which I think is a natural reflection of the director, who I should note, Chloe Zhao,
okay,
directed, wrote, produced, and edited this film.
And also directed The Rider.
Yes.
Which I loved. Talk about naturalism. There was a cowboy, and it was mostly non-actors.
Yes.
Would you say? Yeah.
And she had actually met the lead character in that in her first film. This is only her third film.
Yes.
In Songs My Brothers Taught Me.
Good.
So there's a thread to not only who she works with in her films, but then also I think the style and visuality of her films being used, those elements being used to tell the story.
Yeah. And, you know, besides a brilliant director who has done great work already and somebody who was really tuned into the landscape and the theme that she talks about, people wandering as our original pioneers did in their RVs across the country, this film is also dominated by its star,
Frances McDormand.
Yeah. What is it about her, Mary?
I think she's just very much an authentic actor.
Yeah.
And by that I mean she doesn't put on airs of trying to stay young. When they filmed this, she was a 61-year-old woman.
Yeah.
But she is so dedicated to the craft, to the craft not only of acting, but storytelling and her role in telling that story. She, along with most of the crew, actually lived out of vans for 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, they're my kind of people.
In late 2018. If you're wondering why there's no face masks in this film, that was when they filmed it.
Yeah.
And really lived alongside of people who in real life are this nomad, transient, usually older American community.
Yeah. You know, I used to ride, frequently rode my motorcycle out through that territory, Arizona, Nevada, and into California, whatever. It was perfect on a motorcycle. And there was a sense of camaraderie when you would meet other cyclists or people on the road. One of the great joys was just going into a restaurant and people say, hey, where are you headed, da-da-da, and all that. There is a great, and I think it captures that in this movie.
Very much so. The character of Fern is actually fictional. But the other characters who are her spiritual guides on her journey, as she guides us into our journey into Nomadland, are the real life people upon whom their fictional versions are based. So Swanky, Linda, and Bob are all really who they are virtually portraying.
I know. My favorite being Bob Wells.
I was kind of partial to Swanky.
Oh, Swanky is the second for
and
me.
And Linda, who became the main character in the book upon which this is based, is really the first one who helps Fern navigate the waters of itinerant work and transient work and kind of being on the circuit of where you travel to find these jobs, whether it's working out of a camper force for Amazon or working on beet farms in the Dakotas during harvest season. There's also a stint at working at wall drug, kind of the cheesy roadside restaurant tourist trap that has the, and many of us have seen.
Have you ever been there?
I have not.
Oh, it is. It's just amazing.
The fake Mount Rushmore, the fake big dinosaur on the roadside.
There are signs telling you it's coming.
Yes.
And then you finally get to it. And it really is an oasis because there's nothing out there. And the Dakotas are famously lonely and craggy. And mean sometimes, and that is. But I like one of the things I liked about this was the favorable attitude toward Amazon, which offered part-time work to people who needed it, mm-hmm. and maybe part-time lodging or subsidy for lodging,
for their lodging to park their vans and RVs and campers at this, you know, wherever this place was. They were willing to pay for that in order to have this workforce to help during peak times of their business.
Yeah.
I assume sometime around the holidays.
Yeah, likely. Where ordinarily we'd savage them as the big company that's eating up all these people. No, they were very much supportive and necessary.
And hired them back. Like they had regulars that they would hire back. And that was the circuit that Fern was on. And Linda May was also on that circuit until she bought her land to build her Earthship home in Arizona.
What did Fern called hers? Vanguard.
Vanguard.
Yeah. But there are things like, and I love the contrasts here. The romance of the road, very clearly there. Let me on my
motorcycle. The romance of the West,
right. And moving West young man and all that it promised in our country still does in a way for them. But I also loved the roughness of it. And you were making me think, was it Swanky that told her that she needed to change to carry a spare,
yes.
spare tire?
Swanky was more of the realist of this is the situation you're in. And when you have a flat tire, you need to have a spare.
I know. You could die out here.
You could. And it was also, to a certain extent, we haven't talked about her yet, but Fern's sister, who is not a nomad.
Yeah.
But at one point, you know, Fern's trying to survive on the road and her van breaks down and her van is her home. So she needs it not only to get to places where she can work, but she needs it for shelter.
Sure.
And it's going to cost $2,300 to fix it. And she reaches out to her sister, who she hasn't seen or spoken to in quite some time, to ask for her help.
Yes. And don't they have an interchange where her sister really kind of appreciates Fern?
She does. And it's lovely because there's clearly tension with her sister's husband and the other people who are at dinner at the house, because Fern's character is very straightforward, very more socialistic in her thinking than the other characters who are there. And she really, you sense the tension there, but it's her sister who comes to her and defends, and in her defense, and then later has a private conversation where she really expresses her love and appreciation for who her sister is.
Oh, yeah. And Fern, for me, is just such a classic character. She enjoys meeting people, and she makes friends immediately. Remember that young man that she gave a cigarette to?
Yeah, another nomad.
Yeah.
Young nomad who just decided to head out on the road.
Yeah.
And it turns out that he really was a nomad that the film crew met.
I love this.
And included him in the film.
He was actually very good.
He was very good.
Now, Mary, I have a problem with David Strathairn playing David. He's the only other that I could
recognizable
tell.
Recognizable professional actor.
Actor. I had a little bit of a problem because I thought they were artificially introducing a romantic element. Fortunately, they solved it. But
I think that introduction was clumsy, but it does take her to a point of realization as to where her character Fern is going to end up in this story. So for that, I think it did serve a good purpose. It did feel a little extraneous. It probably wasn't necessary and could have been handled a different
way. I think not. In fact, I really thought it was distracting. I accepted the fact that we have a two-time Oscar winner here in the lead.
Right. And David Strathairn has been nominated for an Academy Award for Good Night and Good Luck, where he played Edward R. Murrow.
Great. Thank you. And so then I thought that maybe, well, they were just interjecting a little bit of Hollywood in here, but I think they handled it very well. He is attracted to her, as you might expect. Here she is, a middle-aged woman who is vibrant and smart and self-reliant and a nice-looking woman, everything that a man who was in his 60s would have hoped to find but may never do. So I thought it was a realistic way for him to respond to her. She's a bit unusual in that she just doesn't, she's not going to do it.
Well, I think as we learn through her journey, there are specific reasons why she's not. And the true love of her life was really her husband, Beau.
Sure.
And she made decisions that were probably against her nomadic nature that's at her core.
Yeah.
To live in a place called Empire, which was a true place, Empire, Nevada, one of the last company towns where this U.S. gypsum mine basically built the town for mining purposes, built the housing for people to live in, and built all the sundry support things that they would need to have a recreational life, and decided to close it.
Yeah. And I think it was the sheetrock mainly, but I don't know. But anyway.
The company was called U.S. Gypsum.
Right. Yeah.
But within 6 months, they went from closing down to vacating the town.
Yeah.
And so she's dealing with a lot of loss from this lifestyle that she isn't necessarily true to her nature, but she loved Beau enough to marry him and to want him to be happy and to live there for what we assume was quite a long time, decades probably.
And you know, it's not untrue that in many cases when people are attached to big companies that these days it's just not the same perks that they once had.
And big companies and working at a company for a lifetime is...
Oh, my gosh.
It's not the American dream for the generations that have
followed. My children will not have it.
Yeah. You know, there's much more transient journeys in people's careers these days.
And there are people then who, like our heroine and everybody else in Nomadland, who are somewhat forced to find an alternative way of making a living.
And it's interesting that the movie's coming out now, and who could have possibly foreseen it? Because this book was actually based on what happened in the fallout after the 2008-2009 recession, when there was this huge ballooning of people choosing or being forced into this nomadic lifestyle and becoming itinerant, transient workers.
Yeah.
As opposed to now, we're in the economic downturn brought on by the pandemic, and how many more people are going to be forced to make this type of choice?
Gosh,
and I think that was the part, in addition to Fern's personal story of grief and loss, that really stuck with me when I was watching the film was, I know this is based on Jessica Bruder's book, Nomadland.
Yes.
I know these are real people that are being reflected, and that there are possibly going to be more people having to join them in this culture.
Sure. I have at least one child who is a very romantic spirit, who is not going to have retirement. And he's going to be like her, like Fern. He's going to be traveling around to different initiatives. For him, they're bigger deals and they're dreams that he has that he can fulfill. But he will not have the stability that I have, nor can he. And so he is very much going to be, and I have to make sure that he sees this film, catch the spirit. And you know, that I wanted to ask you, Mary, you did a wonderful job on our show, It's Movie Time, in describing Frances McDormand as actress. Please do that. I'll tell you why, because I know she's going to be a contender at these big awards that are coming up, and I need people to hear from you. What is it that makes her so magical?
For me, she's just an authentic actor in her craft. She totally dedicates herself to her role, not only as the actor playing Fern, but also Fern's role in telling the story. Now, granted, Frances McDormand also is a producer on this film and actually sought out Chloe Zhao to be director. But she sets that aside and actually focuses on her acting. And I really admire the fact she was 61 years old when the film was shot. She's now 63. She has not fallen into that trap of, I need to have plastic surgery, I need to be airbrushed, I need, you know, whatever those needs are that are this impossible standard for what a woman who's aging needs to look like to have a role in a film.
And she's more beautiful because of it.
And she is more beautiful because of it. And she brings that incredible spirit without the fancy hair, without the fancy makeup.
Yeah.
Because Fern's not going to have those things. You actually have scenes where Fern's cutting her own hair and it's not a wig. Frances is really cutting her hair. And there's a scene where Frances is cutting Swanky's hair. So they actually, I just really appreciate Frances McDormand as an actress, not only for how I've described her, but also the risk she's willing to take, the role she's willing to take. And she's such a great advocate for independent film and bringing great people together to tell stories, much like, you know, her husband.
Well, you know, yes, of course, she's associated with the Coens, and her husband is one of the Coens.
Joel? I hope I don't get that wrong.
But
I think it's Joel.
Yeah, and you're reminding me that if I think about the range, her range, think about her back in Fargo.
Oh, yeah?
You know what I mean? I know, exactly. And how
I'm going to barf.
Right.
Yes.
And how wonderful that comic turn was for her. And so if you think she's always naturalistically acting, she's not. Mm-mm. And she was in that Billboards.
Yes.
You know,
three billboarding.
Yeah.
Billboards outside Ebbing.
Yeah.
Playing, it's a long title. I'm sorry.
Right,
I can't get it.
But playing a tough as hell lady.
And she plays really unique but full-fledged characters, which is just, you know, such a joy. Even in the film Something's Gotta Give, where she played the sister sidekick.
Oh my,
to
I've forgotten
Diane
that.
Keaton.
Oh my, yeah.
And
good
that
one.
Was a small role, but really just in the scene she was in, you just really were drawn to her because she's just such a great actress and so dedicated to her role in telling the story.
I like to contrast her, as I would most female actors, most actresses, with Meryl Streep. And it makes me think that Meryl Streep is sometimes, and very frequently, a flamboyant actress. Really the opposite of Frances McDormand. She's not often called upon to be terribly subtle. You know, she's in this recent musical.
The Prom.
The Prom, in which she's going over, not over the top, but she can do that.
She can get there.
Which only highlights for me the brilliance of McDormand, who's constantly playing it down so that she can play as a film actress. And I'm so appreciative of all great film actors.
Well, so much of film acting, unlike stage acting, which she's won a Tony and is a brilliant stage actress as well. But with film, especially a film like this, where it's not heavy on dialogue, the dialogue that is there is very rich. And it's rich because of Frances's portrayal of Fern, just a twitch of an eye or a downturn of the corner
of
the
mouth,
plays so much into us learning Fern's story.
Yes.
And for me, that's why she is a leading contender and has already been recognized as best actress in a leading role in numerous film festivals.
Yes.
And she's now nominated for a Golden Globe. We'll find out Sunday night if she'll win. But also I would be shocked if she does not get an Academy Award nomination, because being able to portray so much, just using your face and just subtle movements and expressions in your face, it's an amazing thing to watch.
Yeah. So we know that this film is going to be up for a Golden Globe, and it will certainly be up for an Oscar. And I guess our job, which we have done, I think, in two shows, is to try to point out this is truly a worthy film.
It's very worthy. And even if you're shy about watching a film that isn't heavy on action and isn't heavy on plot,
right.
You will be so richly rewarded mm-hmm. following Fern on her journey. Yeah. And it's an eye-opening experience, not only with her as a character, but her as our guide into this subculture of our country that really exists.
Yep. So, Mary, why don't you get us out of this? Oh, Lord, yes, of course.
It's ready. We're ready to hit the road.
Right.
And I give the film an A.
And I do, too.
Back Talk is produced by John DeSando. Listen to the shows on the podcast experience at wcbe.org.